But I want you to think of the context. We always should think of the context of where we're reading. This is Paul writing the longest of his New Testament little letters to New Testament churches. And so he's writing 29 chapters to a group of people that he dearly loves, that he spent 18 months of his life with, that he spent an awful lot of time corresponding back and forth to. Now think about these people. These are the believers that Paul has already explained to them the Christian life is a race. And Corinth was part of the Pan-Isthmian Games. And so they were a part of the whole Olympic preparedness time. And so sports and athletics and races and the racetracks were just right in the heart of the city. You couldn't go to Corinth without seeing the athletic, kind of like going to the Olympic Village in China. You would just know that the Olympics was going on. And so he had already explained that the Christian life is a race. He encouraged them to strive all their life long for crowns. Just as the Olympic athletes or the Pan-Isthmian athletes of the area would receive a special crown, he says, I want you to so prepare your life, so discipline yourself, so act like a spiritual athlete that you get a crown in heaven. So he'd already done that. Then he reminded them that every single believer would someday stand all alone before the great Bema seat of Christ. That's chapter 5. We're in 6. That's chapter 5. So he's already reminded them of that truth, that there was going to be that individual lesson where Jesus Christ has us stand all alone. And not only do we stand there, but he also said he's going to take our life and put it through a fire. And the fire will burn up everything that was superfluous, that wasn't sin, but it wasn't eternal. It just was kind of stuff we did because we could, because we wanted to, because it was possible, but not because it specifically was in obedience to the Lord and for His glory and to advance His kingdom. And all that stuff that we did, that wasn't sin. The sin's gone. When we get to heaven, there's no condemnation, no sin, no record, and the penalty's on Christ. But everything else in life, most of life isn't sin. Now, snow blowing might border on sin, you know, and having to hack that ice that the plow keeps. They did it again this week to my driveway. Maybe our attitude toward it could be sin. But most things, going to the grocery store, going to school, all that stuff isn't sin. But if it's not consciously made an offering of worship to the Lord, if it's not consciously through the Holy Spirit breathed in as an act of service to the Lord, then it's just going to burn up. We were just kind of letting the clock run. So Paul had already told them this. He warned the believers that they're headed for a life's work analysis performed by Jesus Christ himself. And from that very same Apostle Paul, we get the clearest marching orders for a life that God rewards by grace. And it's right here. It's after he'd gone through all that fire and judgment and crowns and discipline yourself. Then he writes this section that we just read. Ponder with me the implications of God's message, starting in chapter 6, verse 14. Paul concludes that based on the character commands of God and His Word, we can have a life that doesn't burn up. What he's saying in this little section, he's saying, this is how you have a life that won't burn up. Kind of like when you put dried grass on the fire. There's a big difference between throwing a hardwood log on a fire and throwing in just some crumbled up paper or dried weeds or grass. One just goes, it's gone. And the other endures and produces something. And he says, how do you have a life that doesn't just burn up? A life that won't cause us to weep at our loss, as it says in 1 Corinthians chapter 3. That life is one that has cultivated holy habits, energized by God's grace, as Titus 2 talks about. And we harvest the fruit of eternal rewards from our life.